Guess not. How are you doing?
I'm okay. At least the medics haven't found anything to worry about.
But, she prompted,
I sure miss you.
We'll be moving to Alpha in another week.
You'll be even farther away.
Only 3 minutes.
30-some million kilometers. Felicia didn't reply. She knew what she wanted to say, but wasn't certain she had the nerve to say it. Brad asked, How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine.
Kossoff hasn't come on to you?
Not at all. Whenever we happen to meet, he's polite and proper.
He hasn't asked you to dinner or anything like that?
No, said Felicia.
Nobody's interested in me.
I am.
She smiled.
And I'm interested in you. Only you.
I miss you, Phil. Wish we were together. She took a deep breath, then said,
We could be, you know.
What? What do you mean? Felicia plunged ahead.
I've been thinking about a virtual reality session.
VR sex?
We could get MC to set up a VR link between us, she said quickly, all in a rush. We could share a session.
Brad's face lit up for a flash of a second. Then he shook his head. Too many ways for other people to peek in.
MC could keep the link strictly private.
You've talked to him about it? Lowering her eyes, Felicia admitted.
Yes, I have.
Brad looked surprised, but then his expression eased into a smile. Well, we'd better do it before the ship hauls off to Alpha. I won't be able to deal with a 3-minute wait for your responses. Felicia laughed delightedly. VR sex was a little strange at first. Weird. Brad had to wear his biosuit, including his helmet. Fortunately, the suit's gloves had virtual reality circuitry built into them. Its urination relief tube served as a makeshift masturbation device. He was clumsy at first, knowing that Felicia was in a full-body VR suit, but passion rose swiftly. After his third climax, Brad lay on his bedroll, spent and sweaty. I'll have to clean up the suit, he thought. But he was smiling hugely, nonetheless.
And no one tried to cut into our link? Felicia asked MC.
It was morning. She had slept blissfully, but not for long, after her VR session with Brad. You had complete privacy, the master computer's avatar replied from the holographic display.
Does that include you? Felicia wanted to ask,
but she held herself back. She was afraid of the answer. Instead of making breakfast for herself, Felicia went to the cafeteria. She saw Dr. Steiner, head of the biology department, sitting alone, and went to her table. Ask her, she told herself. The worst she can do is say no.
May I join you?
Steiner looked up at Felicia and nodded. They made a study in contrasts. Steiner, tall, blonde, regal. Felicia, petite, dark, elfin. Ursula Steiner had scant patience for idle chit-chat, Felicia knew. So without preliminaries, she asked,
Dr. Steiner, for some time I've been thinking that I would like to study the octopods on Alpha full-time.
Steiner's pale brows rose a centimeter.
Full-time? The whole department is concentrating on the gammas, Professor Kossoff's orders.
I know, but surely you can spare one person to study the octopods. There's so much about them that we don't know.
Yes, Steiner replied slowly. That's true enough, but don't you want to continue working with your husband?
There's not much I can do to help Brad in his work, Felicia replied. The octopods are a challenge that we're ignoring, don't you think? Steiner was silent for several moments. At last she said,
I'll talk to Kossoff about it.
Thank you. A rare smile inching across her lips, Steiner asked,
You want to make a niche for yourself?
I suppose I do, said Felicia.
Tired of standing in your husband's shadow already? Steiner asked.
Surprised, almost shocked, Felicia replied,
It's not that at all. I just want to make a real contribution to our work.
Yes, I see, Steiner said, her smile morphing almost into a smirk. I was wondering how long the honeymoon would last.
Learning. Slowly, painfully, Brad learned the Gammon's language, and their ways. Some of their behaviors were almost human, others utterly alien. They were sexless farmers who spent virtually all their waking hours tending the crops they grew. Every member of the village worked in the fields, even Drm, the one Brad thought of as their chief.
Brad spent his days with them, watching their unending toil along the rows of their farmland. He sat with them at their evening meal when they gathered around fires cooking their usually meatless stews. He even grew accustomed, almost, to their mouths being in their midsections, fringed with worm-like appendages that turned Brad's own stomach no matter how many times he watched the aliens shoveling their food into their shiver-inducing maws. After the evening meal, Brad would leave the village and walk back to his shelter for the night. The gamins showed practically no curiosity about where Brad came from or why he had appeared among them. Strange, Brad thought. But then he reminded himself that these were alien creatures, intelligent, but the products of a different evolution on a different world. The traits that appeared almost human to him were coincidences, nothing more. They weren't exclusively vegetarians, he saw. Every few days, Drum, the village chief, would pick three or four of them to go out beyond the edge of their fields and hunt for small game, which went into the stew pots that night. Brad learned that the animals he had given them had become meals after being ritually sacrificed and cooked. Once he returned to his shelter, Brad spent his evenings talking with MC, Kossoff, and Littlejohn, reviewing the day's events, preparing for the next day's observations. He spoke with Felicia every night, of course, before going to sleep. She told him the linguistics team was expanding their understanding of the gamin's language. "Thanks to you, dear," Felicia said happily, her warmly smiling face filling his comm screen. "How are you?" he asked, stretched out alone on his bedroll. With obvious excitement, Felicia answered, "Steiner has assigned me to study the octopods. She talked it over with Kossoff, and he okayed my request. He even seemed happy about it," she told me. Brad muttered, "Beware of Greeks bearing gifts." "You're jealous." "Just looking out for your welfare," he replied, feeling nettled. "You're important to me." "I miss you," she answered. "It's lonely here without you." "Virtual reality is not the same, is it?" "It's better than nothing," she said. Trying to put up a brave front, Brad said, "Well, I've got plenty of new friends down here." Felicia's expression went somber.
"We'll be moving to an orbit around Alpha in 2 days."
Even though he knew it was scheduled, her words jolted Brad. 2 days.
"That's what Captain Desai told us."
Brad nodded, his spirits flagging.
"We'll only be 3 minutes away," Felicia said quickly. "We can still talk together every night."
"Yes," said Brad, "I know."
"It's going to be a dangerous time for you down there."
He tried to make light of it. "If the gamins can get through it, I'll get through it."
"Yes," Felicia said, "that's right."
But Brad thought she didn't look at all sure about it. And neither was he realized. The following evening, Brad saw Mx standing alone on the edge of the village, staring at the looming crescent of Beta, bigger and brighter than ever. "Death, time, coming closer," said Mx, flatly, emotionlessly. Brad saw that he was carrying a freshly skinned lizard in one ropey hand. Without another word, he trudged to the house he shared with four other gamins. Brad watched him toss the animal into the cookpot after swiftly chanting the proper prayer of sacrifice. Like prehistoric hunters on Earth, the gamins believed the prey animal came to them willingly and allowed itself to be caught and killed. The prayer was one of atonement and thanks for the creature's sacrifice. Once the game was cooking in the bubbling pot, Mx sat in the circle around the fire. Brad hunkered down beside him, still awkward in his biosuit. "Tell me about the death time," Brad said. Mx's eye slid upward toward the starlit sky, then focused again on Brad. "Beta brings monsters." He didn't say Beta, of course, that was the computer's translation for the low humming sound that represented their name for the approaching planet.
"Monsters?" Brad asked.
"Terrible monsters. They kill."
"From Beta?"
Mx bowed his domed head.
"They bring death."
"What are they like?" Brad asked.
"Big. Fast. Kill everyone."
The computer could not convey sadness or fear, of course, but Brad felt both emotions. Monsters that kill everyone. Monsters from Beta.
"It must be part of their mythology," said Littlejohn, later that night as Brad told the anthropologist about his conversation with Mx.
Shaking his head, Brad replied, "It sounded awfully real to me. not some fairy tale. Little John smiled patiently. Mythology is real to those who believe in it. My people believed that songs can guide you across the outback, for God's sake. Brad wondered if "for God's sake" was Little John's idea of a pun. Tiger, Tiger.
"You'd better have a look at this," said Olaf Peterson, the head of the planetology department.
Kossoff leaned back in his desk chair and stared at Peterson's lean, pale face. "He looks as if all the blood's been drained out of him," Kossoff thought. "Pasty as a ghost. Even his hair is thin, so blonde it's almost white." But Peterson's blue eyes were sharp as sapphires, glittering.
"What is it?" Kossoff asked the planetologist.
"Beta is waking up." The office wall screen's display lit up to show a fat crescent that Kossoff immediately recognized as planet Beta. The camera view zoomed in past scudding gray clouds to show the barren rocky surface of the planet. Something was stirring down there. Many somethings.
"What in the name of creation is that?" Peterson's voice answered.
"Native life." Kossoff saw a clutch of the tiny rodent-like animals standing on their hind legs, frozen still, staring at what appeared to be a sizable rock, which was splitting apart like an eggshell. A big, meaty paw pushed out of the shell, followed by a heavy head with a mouthful of fangs.
"Good Lord!" gasped Kossoff.
The cat-like creature cracked the rest of the shell open and stepped out languidly on six clawed legs. It glanced at the rodents, still standing less than 10 meters away, then turned and stalked off in the other direction. The data bar at the bottom of the screen showed that the cat was not quite 3 meters long, without including its hairless twitching tail.
"Native?" Kossoff gaped at the beast. "But we haven't seen anything like this before."
"Neither did the predecessors, apparently, when they did their surveillance of the Mithra system. Beta was near its apogee then, locked in deep winter. Every living thing on the planet must have been hibernating."
"Now they're waking up," said Kossoff, his eyes glued to the wall display.
"Good Lord, look at that brute." "The satellite cameras have picked up 8 of them, scattered across the planet." Peterson's voice was quivering with excitement. "Apparently they've been dormant for some time. Now that the planet's warming, they've awakened." The camera followed the beast as it padded purposively across the barren, rock-strewn ground. Peterson repeated, "We've observed 8 of them so far. Some of the larger formations that we thought were boulders are actually some sort of eggs that have been incubating these beasts. Now they are hatching. Maybe they are not fully grown yet." Kossoff's eyes went wider still as the camera view shifted to show what looked like another rock splitting apart, with one of the big cats clawing its way out of it.
"Eggs," Kossoff muttered.
"The biologists will want to see this. I'll call Steiner. We should put more satellites around Beta before we pull out for Alpha."
"Yes," Kossoff agreed absently, his attention focused on the felines.
Dr. Steiner's reedy nasal voice came from the desk's phone console.
"Yes, Professor."
"Come to my office right away, Ursula. Drop whatever you're doing. Beta's waking up."
For the first time since leaving Earth, Kossoff was caught up in the excitement of making a truly unexpected discovery. The huge, ferocious-looking cat-like animals were awakening on Beta after an incubation of nearly half a century. Staring at his office's wall screen, he saw that the cats made earthly tigers look puny. Only a dozen of them had been spotted so far by the satellite cameras, scattered across Beta's barren, rocky surface.